Hello, friends. Welcome to the Living Truth Podcast. This is Kristen Carey hosting again, and we're picking up the second part of a two-part series of Michael and Kristen Unplugged. This is a conversation that we're having about inner healing and recovery. It is a very personal conversation, and you'll see as you listen to this just that we do not have this all figured out, and we are very much in process, just like all of you. We want this episode to both give you hope and also a sense of relief that if you are still struggling and battling, that more help is available, more healing is available, more peace is available. Maybe if you're just like, oh my gosh, I cannot keep doing this, maybe it means you need a break. And that is okay. That is okay. We are very much in this journey with you. If you haven't listened to the first part, it would benefit you to listen to the episode that came out 2 weeks prior so that you can hear the first part of the conversation and then pick up with this one. So without further ado, here is part two. So you mentioned something about getting triggered. So do you still get triggered? And I want to clarify that question too with a secondary question. Sometimes people think of triggers in addiction recovery simply as the getting hooked or having a temptation or a desire to act out. But I know you, and I know when you're talking about getting triggered just in daily life, right? You're referring to what happens when something occurs and it puts you back to a childhood trauma that you're not even aware of and you revert, right? So that's the question is, do you still get triggered? And tell me more about that.
I think it is less and less, though. But that's, you know, one of the things in my childhood was to fly under the radar. Part of the story and unpacking that as the lost child, you know, kids are to be seen and not heard, and as the youngest, just in order to survive, it was like, don't upset dad, don't cause problems. Right. And the deal is sometimes I might be triggered and I'm not really aware of it because I became an expert at just being steady, you know, not expressing those feelings, not dealing with it, because to deal with it, sometimes you need to be laying face down on the carpet, sobbing, you know, like, and anything that might possibly upset dad was death, you know, for a small child. That's kind of the way we might not think it. It might not be a cognitive, like, yeah, thought, I'm going to die, but that's the feeling. Yes. So those old feelings come up, you know, if I go down this path, I might die, you know, that underlying unconscious feeling, that's the trigger, you know, that comes up. It's the old, self that, and all of the feelings of trauma. There's great material out there, like The Body Keeps the Score, and talking about how trauma is stored in the nervous system, as well as, blocked from memory and different things like even if we don't remember it can still come up. And so the trigger is not necessarily, oh wow, I all of a sudden remember something from the past and I remember being beat, you know, by my parent or whatever it is. Well, you know, a lot of people do have those memories. That's, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, this specific memory coming to mind, but it's just those underlying feelings of hysteria. And you were the one that, well, I'm sure you heard this in your recovery circles. If you're hysterical, it's historical. It's an easy way to remember things, right? So that's kind of the trigger. And so those things, they still come up, but it isn't as drastic the way that I respond to it, and I know how to get help. I know what to do. I don't do it perfectly, but the point is that it's getting better. So yeah, the triggers still happen. What you were mentioning too was I think it was in the 80s or 90s when Dr. Patrick Carnes put together the addiction cycle, and he called triggers being something that reminds you of like unwanted sexual behavior in this case. In the case of what he was defining, and the addiction cycle would be sexual addiction. And I don't call those triggers. I call that the bait. That's the bait of how to deal with the trigger. Yeah. So that's differentiating that.
Yes. So you think a lot of times a person who is stuck in cycles of unwanted sexual behavior, they get triggered, like their old trauma, even if it's unconscious, gets triggered. And then going to the addiction is like the bait to get the relief from the pain of the trigger of their old trauma.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Or like what I was saying, something to deal with the emotions so that I don't upset dad, something along that line too. Yeah. Either deal with the pain because I don't want to feel the pain, or I don't want to overreact. That's been a theme, things that I uncover along the journey that I start to realize and see. And one of them was, I don't want to be triggered anymore. I don't want to feel that anymore. I want to be done. I want to be finished.
And I would love to know if that was possible.
Mm-hmm. I haven't met anyone that has said that it was possible. And if they do, I just wonder. It's like holding a beach ball underwater. And the more triggers that you try and hold in that beach ball, it's like putting more and more air in it. And it's like you're going to get tired of holding it underwater, and it's going to launch up into the air in an explosion. So that's what I think would be the case for those people that might say that, it's possible. I'm completely done. I'm waiting for their beach ball to come up and pop out of the water.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It helps me a lot to realize, like, throughout the scriptures, we are told that we are in a process of sanctification as long as we're on this earth. And like, instead of looking at all of this recovery and healing work as, oh, why is this taking so long? I am realizing how much impact my mindset has. And when I view it through the lens of, okay, I am being made like God, if I surrender to his ways and his process, which is not the ways of the world. It's not through hustle and grind. It's not through being talented or paying lots of money. It is through a process of surrender to God and to his ways. And he provides all different resources and people that can, if we're willing enough and we're humble enough, unlock that next level and layer of healing. And I am currently, Michael, you mentioned that it's getting better, like it has gotten better. I'm actually feeling like this rawness, because I've been in a major phase of being rewired in my brain and being like healed. I am in the middle of a massive inner healing, inner working, inner It's like if I was a computer, I'm getting like a whole software update. If I feel like I am being transformed, and I don't believe I'm going to be transformed and it's over. Like my process of healing is over, but just that I am really experiencing a lot of transformation. And unfortunately, friends, oftentimes it takes really painful circumstances for us to release and let go of our MO and our ways of handling the world, our perspectives, and to be willing enough to change and to surrender to the hard work of change. But I am finding both relief in it, and also I am very uncomfortable at times, very uncomfortable, as the ways that I have thought, seen the world, and operated are being challenged. Change can be really uncomfortable, right?
Yeah. That's part of why I think we like to avoid it, you know. But the whole idea of wanting to be done, I've taught that I think there's maybe a small sliver of that might be a longing for Eden, for the restoration of all things, yes. for heaven, if you will. Yeah. Right. So that longing for things to be set back to the rightful place, mm-hmm. of Eden. It's also at the same time addictive thinking, you know, because those pieces are how I look, you know. I want to look like I'm done. I want to be done because I don't want to deal with this anymore, you know. So it's avoidance or image management or whatever it is. And so it's a combination of different things. But I like how you said getting a software update, because being in a former IT professional and software developer, there's the concept that there is no computer code that's free of bugs, and you just get software updates. They improve things, you know, and make it better or come out with new options and different, you know, in my iPhone, I mean, there's software updates coming through all the time and it says bug fixes. Mm-hmm. It's like, really? Like there are problems in the code and bugs in there that they don't realize until they test it out. And that's a lot like life, you know. We have to be tested. It's part of the process, the testing, you know, to see if we, you know, if we really were healed, if that really took place. So, you know, did that software update really work as well as we thought that it did? We have to go through the testing. And something else that came to mind, I know that there are some great authors out there and who put together books and a lot of material on childhood development. And the thing is, so, you know, they have the different stages, the infant, the toddler, the elementary school, the teenager, young adult, you know, these, like the different phases of development and the things that they learn, like the tasks that they're supposed to learn, you know, like at whatever point to become a toddler, you know, they're going to crawl and walk and then learn how to speak, and these different stages of development. But what, you know, what happens when we're triggered is we go back to those stages of development to some degree, and kind of have to re-parent ourselves, have to go through that development again, you know, to re-experience, to experience the emotions and bring some resolution to that trauma of the past, right? That's the process. And it is uncomfortable feeling those old feelings and resolving it. It's hard work. And so that's why the avoider wants to come out and say, I want to be done, because the hard work of going back. So I think, you know, a book about the what about the development as an adult? You know, why do these experts, you know, talk about the stages and then it ends somewhere, like when we learn how to take care of ourselves and our children at the same time, when we can take care of, you know, our family. A lot of the authors and experts have, you know, stopped, and it's like, wait a minute, we need to be honest. Like, there's still some stages of development that happen all the way through until we die, right?
Right. Well, and that is what both of us have experienced through doing internal family systems work with our therapists. And if you're listening, you're not familiar, this is a form of therapy that where you identify all these different parts of you. It's like, especially when you're young and you feel threatened or you need protection that is not available to you, our soul, our heart, we develop these different parts of us. It's like every age I ever was is still inside of me. And so doing this parts work and listening to these different parts of me, that some of them are very, very loud and want my attention, and they want to hijack my life. But it's not because they're bad. It's because they are traumatized. It's because they're trying to keep me safe. And so integrating the work of identifying where I am stuck emotionally, where I can see that my thoughts and my behavior are not my truest integrated self, all of these parts with their voices heard and their needs met and surrendered to relationship with God. And I can learn how to parent these inner children, listen to them, identify where they made vows because of lies they believed because of traumatic things that happened, and identify the hurt and wounded and broken places and allow God to come in and bring healing. And I think for a long time, I tried to outrun a lot of that, but it wasn't an intentional outrunning. It was my nervous system stuck in a flight state because I didn't know what was going on inside of me and what to do about it. And so this process of healing that I'm in right now, I feel like I'm addressing parts of me from ages 3 to about 5 years old that I don't even have conscious memory of. It's really fascinating.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. And the IFS work that you're talking about, for me to really understand that better and apply it, in a way that made sense biblically. And for those listeners that might, that will benefit from this part, what I teach is on Isaiah 61, where this was what Jesus, when he announced his ministry, he read from Isaiah 61, and the prophet was basically prophesying what Jesus and the ministry was. Part of it was healing the brokenhearted, and some of the translators, you know, they translate the two Hebrew words that were used into one and say brokenhearted, but really it's two Hebrew words that mean the shattered heart. So I see those pieces mm-hmm. that you're talking about, the broken pieces of a shattered heart. So what happens when we experience that trauma is that we have an unresolved episode or event or series of events in our life. And in the case of the little T trauma that you talked about and not getting our needs met, maybe it's at the end of some of those developmental stages that we talked about or whatever it is, but there's these pieces of unresolved past, if you will, that's what's coming up. And so, yeah, you kind of embody that and talk about it. It's not multiple personality or right. anything like that, but it's just this idea that we we have these unresolved places. I like how, you know, what John Eldridge calls them is just these young places inside of yourself that come up, these young places. And what happens with the avoidant, when we don't want to deal with it, we shut those places off, shut them out, and push them away. And it's kind of like when your child, you know, falls off their bike and skins their knee, you know, you're not going to, well, most parents would not say, get up, you know, shut up, stop crying. Like, yeah, some did that, right? Yeah, I understand. But, you know, the proper way to handle it would be to pick your child up and love on them and put Band-Aids on them, right? And so that's what Jesus is talking about in bandaging the shattered heart, healing the shattered heart. And that's how that should be our approach to those places inside of ourselves too, instead of saying, you know, like the abusive parents. So we're kind of abusive parents to those young places inside of ourselves. In our own hearts, saying, get up, you know, stop crying, shut up, like push it away, try to avoid dealing with it. Mm-hmm. And we need to take a different approach. And like, I don't want that young place to come up and hijack things and behave in immature ways, you know. Yeah. But the idea is the more that we push it away and are abusive in so many ways, mm-hmm. to those young places inside of ourselves, the more it just causes more problems, right?
Yeah. And you recently had that revelation, like that you were overdoing it with restricting your calorie intake and stuff as you were trying to lose weight, and realized, oh my gosh, I need to have a little bit of fun here and there and eat a little bit of ice cream and, you know, enjoy myself a little bit more, because otherwise those young places inside of us, they revolt. So none of this is done with a spirit of like, come on, let's go, let's heal and grow the heck up. Right. I mean, both of us are taking on more like playful type things. You with your mini blocks and me with my paint by number. I mean, it's like adult play, right? It's just, we need to slow down sometimes, be gentle, enjoy a little ice cream, you know, whatever your favorite food is, or a place of beauty, to take some time for rest and joy and delight, instead of just always go, 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 push, 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 or avoid, 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 right? It's so interesting how healing from trauma requires a balance of joy and rest, work, surrender, and relational connection, right? I mean, how do you feel like, and this will probably be our last question here and we'll wrap up, but it's going to be a good segue question into our next couple episodes that we record about our marriage, is how do you feel being in a covenant relationship with another sojourner, another fellow healer, another person that is working on themselves, surrendering, seeking God? How does that impact your own healing journey to be in marriage instead of doing it all by yourself?
Okay. Yeah. I was wondering if you were talking about you or someone else. You
know? We're both going to answer the question. It just came to me. It's not on our list of questions, but it came to me. Like, we are two individuals doing this work, but how does being together impact that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's so refreshing to be able to understand one another and have some, you know, some grace as we're going through the different phases. But of course, all the common themes and language and things that we're dealing with, working through, yeah, it really, really helps us be able to relate to one another on far deeper levels. And so it causes far more intimacy in conversation and marriage and understanding one another, acceptance of one another and the whole person, all of the past, all the things. You know, it really is. I I mean, I couldn't imagine it any other way. But yeah, being having had a previous marriage, I can imagine it now that I think about it in other ways. And it doesn't work as well. Definitely far, far better to have the sojourner, like you mentioned, and being on the same page, going to the same therapist, I think, individually, you know, has helped to, you know, going to the same prayer coach, if you will, and these, you know, having the same, the same professionals, the two professionals that you mentioned, you know, we
it's pretty awesome.
See individually.
They both know us so well.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it gives them even more information to be able to come alongside us.
Right. So yeah, when I saw Jonathan once, you know, he said, well, Kristen has just been saying that you've really been stepping up, coming through, growing a lot and stuff. And I was like, she told you that? Like, hey, that's great. You know? So, yeah, that's helpful too. You know, I know that that can't be the case for everyone, unfortunately, but, and I don't think that it has to be, but it's just, you know, part of our story. So yeah, if it's possible to see the same, to get the same level of help, I think that maybe that's more rare, for a couple to have that, but, that's been extraordinary as well.
Yeah. And so just what do you think? Of encouragement to our listeners who are seeking help alone, because you have had to end your marriage, or your spouse has walked away, or you're not married, whatever, for whatever reason, or perhaps you're in a marriage, but your spouse is not actually actively pursuing recovery. I want to encourage you that you can still experience healing and breakthrough on your own. And that healing and breakthrough can impact your marriage. I'm not saying it can lead your spouse to recovery. I am saying it can change the system, the whole, it can change what is happening in your home, to some degree. Sometimes it provides the clarity that you need to go ahead and end the marriage. Everybody's different, right? But recovery and healing are lifelong processes. They are worth it. Take lots of breaks. Enjoy what gifts God has put in your life. Seek beauty. Seek rest. One step, one day, one moment at a time. And friends, would you take a moment to rate and review the Living Truth podcast today? That will just give more people the ability to find our podcast, as the algorithm will boost it, so that more people can find the help and healing that we want to be able to provide. And until next episode, I am holding out hope for you.